take care of that later? My answer to that is that a wildfire is an emergency, and therefore fire prevention deserves a very high level of priority. I advocate that we adopt a strong set of fire protection provisions and then move on to the other important but less urgent management issues which confront us. I've submitted to your committee a paper outlining the intent behind the authorship of the amendments pertaining to fire protection. Briefly, the amendments require the permanent adoption of the programs which are currently in existence, assuring their place in the overall fire protection regulations. Additionally, the amendments would require improved documentation of the names and locations of river users, which would result in a greater chance of identifying persons responsible for starting wildfires. I believe that this would have an additional value of encouraging leadership and personal responsibility among all users. The 1986 Cascella fire, which took place with all of the 1986 fire regulations in effect, was traced to a boater's camp. The responsible party fled the scene and was not located, leaving firefighting entities to bear the cost of fire suppression. These amendments would create a fund presided over by the commission, which would compensate for private property losses and fire suppression costs when the responsible party is not located or is unable to pay. This would appear to be a much fairer system than having the costs borne by the individuals who suffer the losses, as is currently the case. After the 1985 Gordon Ridge fire, compensation was received at a rate which ranged from 20 to 35 cents per dollar of loss. The individual who started this fire simply did not have the funds to provide full restitution. Some people believe that insurance is the answer to the problem. Unfortunately, many potential losses cannot be insured against fire, and even when insurance is available, premiums are often extremely high. As I mentioned earlier, a wildfire is an emergency and must be dealt with as such in a manner which considers prevention as well as strategies for managing the consequences of its occurrence, and the amendments attempt to accomplish this end. My family and many of my friends and neighbors have been adversely affected by the consequences of public use of the Deschutes. I do not wish to dwell unduly on the past, but let's make sure that we learn from our past experiences. I would like very much to be able to operate our ranch without suffering any more of the negative consequences of recreation. I know there are a great deal of people, many people, who wish to enjoy the scenic beauty of the Deschutes in as uninhibited a fashion as possible. With the passage of House Bill 3019 and its amendments pertaining to protection from wildfire, I believe that we would be taking a big step in the right direction. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Any questions? Representative Sella.
I guess, just as committee staff, do we have the amendments in this hand engrossed form of the bill?
Yes, they're in there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is John Lilly here? Fine. Why don't you come forward, John? Yes. No, why don't you come up now? Welcome.
Good afternoon. Chairman, members of the Commission, I'm John Lilly, Assistant Administrator for the State Parks and Recreation Division. And in addition to those duties, I have the responsibility for managing the State Scenic Waterway System as well as the Deschutes River Boater Pass program that's under discussion today. The lower 100 miles of the Deschutes River was designated as a scenic waterway in 1969 by a vote of the people. In the mid-1970s, recreation use, particularly whitewater boating use, rapidly became rapidly popular on the river. And as we have seen over the last 10 years, use has tripled. The whitewater boating use has tripled to over 115,000 visitor days per year. Most of that use occurs on weekends and holidays during the summer, over 50% of that use occurring in the months of July and August. By 1980, the problems associated with use with this recreation use caused Governor Attia to form a 17-member citizen task force to address the problems on the river. The key recommendations of that task force were, number one, to not regulate the number of boaters on the river at that time, and number two, rather to rely upon education and cooperation to maintain the quality of the resource and the recreation experience. In 1981, a bill starting in this committee, the legislature enacted the Deschutes River Boater Pass program, which allowed for a ticket to be sold to boaters using the river as a way of creating a dedicated fund to help the agencies manage the recreation resource on the river. While the State Parks and Recreation Division has served as the lead agency, other state, local, federal, and most notably agencies, and most notably Fish and Wildlife and the BLM, that's a federal agency, have been involved in recreation management on the Deschutes. In addition, we work cooperatively with landowners and user groups to implement the task force's recommendations. The state police cadets have been hired to patrol the river, fire regulations have been imposed, access sites developed, lands acquired, toilets constructed, and additional litter and campsite cleanup patrols instituted. Since 1982, the Boater Pass Fund has accumulated over $835,000, which then have been meted out to needs on the river, including two large purchases of property on the lower river that have been referred to in previous testimony. In 1985, the Oregon legislature, in dealing with extending the Boater Pass program, asked the department to have a study done on to determine the recreational carrying capacity of the Deschutes River. And you have that study in your at your table today, and it was completed and done by Oregon State University, and you heard the Representative McTeague tell you that they've heard a report on that. We think that there is a great deal of information of use to all of us, both users, agency people, and legislators, policymakers alike, in that study. Now, speaking to the bill specifically, Parks Division, with one exception, is neutral on the bill. We do not feel that the creation of a Deschutes River Scenic Waterway Recreation Area Commission, in a sense creating a new state agency, is appropriate at this time. We're concerned that creation of another state agency authority involved in management of the river might further complicate the delicate management scheme that exists on the river by adding another agency where we already have three counties, the Indian tribes, Federal Bureau of Land Management, and several state agencies, and the local government. We agree that public involvement in determining the recreation use management future of this river is very important. The Governor's Scenic Waterway Advisory Committee and the state agency and local agency boards and commissions that are involved in making decisions on the river have been doing so for the past few years, and we think they can continue to do so. We think that public involvement is really important, and I can't underscore that enough. We've had numerous efforts at involving the public in management decisions on the river, and I can go into those in much more detail if you prefer. Another concern about the proposal, and I need to go to the map to show you. As we read the bill, it would require that all recreationists would need to pay the access path fee in order to use the river for recreational purposes. That means that fishermen, hikers, campers, etc., would have to get this passed. Currently, as I've stated,
John, can you come over and use the mic so we can pick it up on the
machine? Currently, as I've stated, the boater pass is sold for only people using the blue area of the river when they're boating or doing something in connection with boating on the river. Now, in pointing this out, I know it's difficult to see. Let me turn the blackboard a little bit. But what we tried to do here is illustrate the area that would be involved in this recreation area. And the bill says that there would be not only the scenic waterway, which is a quarter mile on either bank that we've discussed in the previous bills, but also any public lands touching the scenic waterway. So what you have here in the blue
is the state lands, and you can see that here is the lands out near the mouth of the river east of the Dalles that have been acquired recently by the Fish and Wildlife Department and State Parks Division. The most notable state lands on the river are here at the mouth and down here at Warm Springs, where many of the trips begin on that upper stretch of the river. The yellow is Federal Bureau of Land Management lands. These are owned and managed by the Bureau of Land Management out of their Prineville district. They are by far and away the largest single public landowner on the river. Their management program, recently adopted, called the Two Rivers Management Plan, calls for their management of the recreation aspects of the river to fall in line with the current scenic waterway management direction. The pink outline here and here at Shears Falls and in this area is the Warm Springs Confederated Tribes Reservation near Warm Springs. The red, of course, just outlines the area that would be within the recreation area and adjacent to the river within a quarter mile. All this is to say that graphically portrayed here, that you have a multitude of agencies involved. State, Bureau of Land Management on yellow, and the Confederated Tribes. All of the white that occurs along the river is privately owned property. Now, we've talked to our Assistant Attorney General and asked her that in the event that this bill passed, what would be the effect of a use fee like we're contemplating on the federal lands. They tell us the passage of the bill alone would not impose that fee on the federal lands, but in order to do so, we would have to come to some kind of a management agreement with the BLM. So I say this to you in order to pass that information to you. Our conversations with the BLM have been very preliminary. We're not sure, you know, how they would land on the idea. Finally, the scenic waterway, the Deschutes River here, is a unique resource. We all are aware of that. It provides many hours of recreation pleasure for not only Oregonians, but visitors to our state. And we're pleased that the legislature would take up this issue in order to look to the future management of the river. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Anderson.
Does the Parks Division have a policy or a stand on the Deschutes River as far as limited entry?
No, we do not.
Do you have any suggestions other than creating a state agency and something in the way of an advisory committee, which would either be directly under the division or under the other committee that you have? And I guess part of the lengthy question is, as time goes on, the pressures are here. You know, my Umpqua River, my entire district is the Umpqua River, and other rivers around the state. The pressures are going to be there, and if we're going to have advisory committees, how about advisory committees as they're needed for the various river drainage systems? And so on. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I've not had a lot of time to discuss this idea with the director or the commission, but I know for a fact that the Transportation Commission, as I've stated in my testimony, would be contrary to creation of a new commission to manage just the Deschutes. But I think there is some benefit to creating an advisory committee as such to help the agencies hammer out management direction on the river. But, and I think that should be a limited term advisory committee focused just on developing a management plan. But that really only gets to part of the issue. The big issue on the Deschutes River, and the reason that many of us are here today, is because that burning question is how many people should we be allowing on that river? You're going to probably hear from other people testifying today that say that limited entry should be what's done on this river. We've already heard from a number who want to keep the river open and available to all users. What we need as agencies is some concrete direction as to which way to tip the scales for us. With that direction, then I think that the citizens and the agencies can get together and produce a management plan which will meet the future needs of the Oregonians and visitors alike.
Let me ask you about the direction. in your judgment, what's the best way and the most appropriate way to get that direction?
Well, I think that House Bill 3019 proposes some management guidelines that get us to that kind of concept. There's also a proposal in one of these amendments to develop a management plan. I think you've got to say let's go ahead and work on a coordinated management plan. And number two, we need to deal with the issue again of are we at a point where we want to limit entry in order to meet the social and ecological impacts that we're seeing down there, or do we want to consciously say that no, this river is so important as a recreation resource that we want to work at taking care of the resource base, but also we want to make it available to as many people as possible. I think that Mr. Shelby's report provides some basis for moving in that direction.
Representative Parkinson.
Yeah, Mr. Lilly, do we have limited entry in the state now on some streams? And if so, would you describe how that works? In other words, first come, first serve, drawings.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, the Rogue River in southern Oregon has a limited entry system on about a 38-mile segment called the Wild Section. That's basically a system whereby floaters who want to get access to the river write in at the beginning of the year and apply for a date. Their name is put in a computer lottery for that date, and if they're drawn and they have the right number of people in their party, then they're chosen for that date. There's a limited number of people that can launch on each day, which is 120 people, and that number of people is divided evenly between commercial and the non-commercial side. That is, the guides have 60 people to start, and the non-commercials or private boaters like you or I would have 60 starts. Now, if we don't confirm our trip, or if we cancel our trip, then those spots are available, and we can call in by telephone within a certain amount of time and actually acquire those permits to go on the river.
Representative Parkinson.
One other thing I should say. That is only in effect from, I believe it's June 1st to just after Labor Day. The rest of the year it's totally available for free access.
Well, the reason for my question, maybe you could expand on just a little bit more. It doesn't look like a limited entry permit system would be compatible with outfitters and guides, but where you said then they give them half or something. We've had a similar bill in my other committee in agriculture, dealing with game ranches. And it's kind of the same thing, different resource, but quite similar. And so I guess if you'd just help me just a little bit more on is limited entry compatible with a guide service?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, I'm probably not the best one to answer that because I'm not in the guide business. But what I have observed over time is that the guides seem to prefer having limited entry. If they have a limited entry system, then they prefer one that sets out for them the number of starts or slots per day that they can have. Now, the other side of the coin is that the private boaters wish that all guides would compete equally with them for all the slots that are available. There are some that reject the idea of giving a monopoly to a certain number of guides.
Mr. Parkinson. In other words, then, for work, you'd have to give half the elk to the guided groups and half the elk to the rest of the public. Okay. It is very similar. It's amazing. Different thing. Thank you.
Is it? Let me ask you, in your judgment, even though we've got these problems that we're talking about, in your judgment, is it any too soon to start determining what we might do to get at the issue?
Or should this wait for a couple of years and simmer a bit?
Mr. Chairman, I really don't know how to answer that this time. I felt that with the passage of the bill in 1985 that gave us direction to do this carrying capacity study, that what we'd be doing in this session was probably wrestling with that as we are. It appears to me that the positions of the folks are polarized, and that particularly on the limited entry issue, and that getting there may be very difficult sledding.
Thank you. Did you have a question, Mr. Soa?
Then I, as I understand what you're saying, then there is no coordinated resource management plan
presently or envision for the future unless we pass some legislation.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Soa, the plan of the agencies, I at least speak for the Parks Division, is that we feel that it's time to move forward with a river, a coordinated management plan for the entire river. What happens in this session would help us a great deal to know what direction to go. Absent of anything happening, we feel then that we will stand pat on the direction that the governor's task force gave us in 1980 and move forward with basically with those types of recommendations, which would be no limited entry system. I should point out that the Fish and Wildlife Department and many other agencies have developed a coordinated management plan for the lower, about 25 miles of the river, including the federal land, the state land, and some private property between Max Canyon and the mouth. And that management plan, though, deals more directly with the management of the grazing that goes on in that area, and it provides us a forum to work with the ranchers in the area on problems with fires, etc.
In other words,
Representative Anderson. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, you finish.
Well, on that basis, then, you're telling me that there is beginning a coordinated resource management plan on the lower 25 miles, but nothing proposed on the area that that the other piece of legislation would ask for a limited entry?
I think, Representative Soa, in the context of your question, that's right. We don't propose moving ahead with limited entry on any other section of the river.
And then one final one.
Representative Soa.
Is there, in the Department of Transportation budget, is there money budgeted for a resource management plan for the area that's proposed for limited entry?
Representative Soa, yes, we have some funds set aside to help us with the resource management plan, with using some of the boater pass revenues that would be coming to the division in the next biennium. In addition, some of our existing staff that are general funded in the Scenic Waterway Program would be assisting in that project.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
I guess first is more or less a statement in that, of course, we have the Governor's Scenic Waterway Advisory Committee. And I get a bit parochial in our North Umpqua River is not a scenic river and would not fall under the direction of that committee. So I would, if we're moving in the way advisory committees, you want to leave that option open. My main question is, we're all embroiled now in certification of state agencies under state agency coordination. I just wonder where we are, because there are a multitude of even just state agencies that are involved in management of the Deschutes River area, starting with the Division of State Lands, Fish and Wildlife, Parks Department, DEQ, and on and on. Where are we in certification, and who's going to be the lead agency for management of the Deschutes River?
Representative Anderson, the state law that we operate the Scenic Waterway Act under tells us that the Department of Transportation is to coordinate the activities of state agencies and, to the extent it can, federal agencies within that quarter-mile corridor. We would hope that the Parks Division could continue in that role as the Governor's Task Force asked us to do or instructed us to do in 1980. In terms of certification of a state agency coordination program, the Department of Transportation is one of the few state agencies that has a certified program, and we've had very good working relationships with the local government on the river as well as in other areas of the state.
Well, I guess that
does that get to your question?
Surprise me. I think I was aware that your program was certified, notwithstanding the fact that I'm sure there are certain conflicts that will arise between the Division of State Lands, Warm Springs, which is not, of course, a state agency, and so on. And I think it needs a little more work.
It's, may I respond?
Yes.
Representative Anderson, I think you've hit on an important point there, and that is that this river is unique because of the presence of the reservation and the number of acres of federal land. While the state agencies, the reason I think that that there are two bills dealing with this issue is just exemplary of the fact that there are two different viewpoints on what should be done with this river. The Senate Bill 945, introduced by the Water Policy Committee and at the request of the Confederated Tribes, goes another direction, goes towards limited entry, at least on the stretch of river adjacent to the reservation. This bill, on the other hand, comes from a camp of folks who are interested in keeping the river open and available for public use.
Would it be correct to say that it would be certainly possible to have, as you've indicated in reference to the other rivers, that you could have part of it open entry and part of it limited entry?
Certainly. This is a 100-mile-long river. In doing studies and talking to people, they feel that there are good points can be made for managing four river segments in separate ways. We've tried to treat it, as it's come out of the governor's task force, we've tried to treat it with rules that are consistent, because we find that people use all 100 miles of the river at one time or another. When you're dealing with such important things as campfire regulations, if you have four different rules, you'll find a great deal of different difficulty in getting the people to understand that.
Representative Anderson?
Well, we're a long way from getting there in coordination, and you people as lead agency, I guess, if that's the direction the task force and so on wants to go and everything, I think it's commendable. But I guess it bothers me that I've never been known as a real super preservationist type of environmentalist, but I lean more and more toward Tom McCall, and I guess I can point out when the Rogue River, what a disaster that was when we declared it a National Wild Scenic River. The first thing the federal government did was to publish a fancy colored brochure of all the wonders of that stretch of the river, and the foot traffic alone quadrupled in a matter of 4 or 5 years and tramped down all the ferns and the duff in the forest and left their sardine cans and everything. It was a complete disaster, so I guess I'm hoping that not that many more people find out about the Deschutes River, because we've hit the wall in several sections of it, and I guess that's my statement.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Lillie. Before we call additional witnesses, let me mention to the committee, we've got a couple people currently gone. We are waiting for the revised and hopefully the final copy of the tire recycling bill, so that when we get that, I want to go into work session on that. And I would ask, if you're going to be leaving the committee for any length of time, if you'll let the clerk know where you're going to be, so that when that bill is available, we can call people in to hear it and vote on it. At this point, I would ask Zane Jackson of Confederated Tribes, Warm Springs, to come forward. And then following that, we'll ask both Shelby to come on. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Zane Jackson. I'm chairman of the Tribal Council of Warm Springs, Oregon.
Welcome.
Area tribes. We're here on the right is James D. Noteboom, attorney for the tribes. Over here is Warren R. Clements. He's a member of the tribes. Also serves on the Oregon Scenic Waterways Commission. Our visit here today is in opposition to House Bill 3019 for...
Mr. Jackson, could you pull the mic a little closer to you, please?
Our Thank visit you. Here today, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, is in opposition to House Bill 3019. We have a prepared statement, but I would ask Mr. Noteboom, our attorney, to summarize those, because some of the things that maybe have changed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I would like to focus on just a few points that I think are really critical. As was mentioned, the Warm Springs tribes have supported and been involved in drafting Senate Bill 945. The primary difference, I think, between the two bills is this issue. One, the 3019 focuses solely on management objectives on preservation of the river from an environmental or ecological sense. Senate Bill 945 focuses on that issue, but also says you have to address the social impacts and the social concerns that occur on the river. That can be issues that we get developed between boaters and non-boaters, between jet boaters and non-boaters, between Indians and non-Indians, between private landowners and recreationists, all of those types of issues. Those are really excluded, I think, from 3019. Going back a bit to the last session of the legislature, in Senate Bill 202, when the OSU study was authorized and directed, the study was directed to look at both of those types of issues. In addition, it directed the people conducting the study to look at the different segments of the river, because they have very different characters on each of those segments, and come up with some recommendations to the legislature for management alternatives. Because what a lot of what we've heard